Welcome in. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and you have downloaded, subscribed, and rated All Ball, All Basketball, all the time. Now, my guest this week is Amir Johnson. We may pump out another pot or two here as we're getting ready for the quarantine bubble basketball games. Thursday, we'll see our first kind of scrimmages from the bubble, which should be fascinating. It's a nice little ramp up. And remember, as of now, and this is July 21st, on the 20th, we found out zero positive bubble quarantine tests. So the bubble seems to be working, even though dudes had to be told, hey man, put some shorts on when you get an answer at the door. And there is the tip line, the rat line, the fink line, the snitch line. Regardless, it seems to be working out for the NBA thus far. We don't have games yet, but we're creeping closer and closer to them. Bunch of things I want to get to. Amir Johnson's our guest. Amir is essentially the last of the Mohicans, like the last guy to come straight from high school to the pros. And, you know, it's interesting. You'll be fascinated to hear about his trials, his tribulations. Like, end of the day, he made it. But would he have been more ready, more refined, played more? Would he have made more money had he gone to a year, 2 years, 3 years of college? Playing at Louisville was where he was supposed to go. Let's welcome in Amir Johnson. He's playing in the Five tournament. This event is available on pay-per-view, DirecTV, Dish, and on demand off your remote. The event has also been attracting the betting public. We see BetOnline and others carrying lines on the games. Live games you can bet on. That's right. Sports is back. And it starts with the Five tournament. I want to talk about all that. But first, let's start in high school. Okay. You're a high school superstar. And you're in the era where guys were going straight from high school to the pros. You were going to Louisville, signed, sealed, delivered. What was the process like of deciding to be, frankly, the last guy of that generation to be drafted straight in the NBA?
Well, yeah, you got my background now. Well, after being in high school and seeing, like, the older class in front of me, like, starting watching LeBron in 03, in 04, you had Dwight Howard and those guys. And when our class came up 05, we seen a bunch of guys go out of high school. So by the time we came up, we were like, you know, why not do that too? And I remember at the McDonald's All-American game, I think that was like the game where everybody kind of showcased their talent and were able to play in front of the world and scouts, you know. And we before the game, we all decided, like, who's going to go to college and want to go to try to go to the pros. And, you know, guys have been like, I'm going to go to college. Like, no, I'm going to try to make the pros. And it seemed like that game where it was like the game where you can showcase and actually come out of high school. And why not, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's, okay, so on your team was Byron Eaton, who went to Oklahoma State, Monte Ellis, who went straight to the league, you, Mario Chalmers, went to Kansas, won a national championship, eventually went to the league. Luke Zeller went to Notre Dame. Micah Downs, he didn't do much at KU. Julian Wright, who went to KU, then to the league. CJ Miles, who went straight to the league, didn't he? Or did he go to Texas for you? He went to Texas for you, I think. Oh, he went straight to the league? Okay.
No, he went straight to the league. It was Lou Will. It was, I think, Andre Blatch went out. Tyler Hansburg went to Carolina. I think the only guys in my class was CJ, Lou, Jill Green, Andre Blatch, myself, I believe.
Andrew Bynum? Andrew Bynum as well.
Andrew Bynum, yes, sir. I forgot about him. He went high. He was a high pick.
Right. So what was it? Okay, so you decide, all right, I'm going to the league. I'm not going to go play for Louisville.
Then you could actually put your name in the draft, and if you didn't get drafted, you could still go to college. So it was like a win-win. It was a win-win for me. So I was just like, why not? You know what I mean? Why don't I try out, see if I can make the league? If not, you know, I'll do my thing in college and then get drafted later. But I was luckily I was able to get drafted.
When you got drafted by the Pistons, was there a thought, man, this was a mistake?
No, it was dream come true. I mean, as a young kid, I always wanted to play in the NBA. And being from California, I was a Laker fan. And Detroit just had beat my Lakers. But that all went out of the water. As soon as I got drafted to Detroit, I was super excited and happy to be in the NBA.
All right, you show up, okay, and you show up in Detroit, second round draft pick. What do you remember about your first training camp?
First training camp was kind of starstruck to see all these guys that are super old. I'm here, 18-year-old kid, playing against grown men. And I think the only thing I had with me is I knew how to work. And I basically listened to everything anybody told me. And I had that work ethic. And that's all I had with me. I didn't know how to drive. I was young. I had to learn how to get my license. I was fresh out of high school. I had to learn to take care of bills in my own apartment. Like, the outside world was a little bit of a challenge for me because I was so used to just taking the bus everywhere and walking everywhere, you know, living home with my mother. And I had to basically be in this grown man world. Basically, I feel like my first year was basically my college years of just learning the process. And let alone the learning how to drive and learning how to drive in snow was was the difficult part for me. And I just kind of figured everything out on the fly.
Who was the coolest to you of the older dudes?
Everybody was kind of just took care of me, but I think the most interesting was probably Rasheed Wallace. I feel like the way he just did stuff was just so intriguing. Like, it was just different from everybody else. Like, I remember one time he came, he's a Kansas City Chiefs fan, he came to practice in a football helmet. Because he was, I think his team won, man. It was just, he's just an interesting dude, man, funny dude. But everybody was so down to earth and cool. Like, I was a young kid, and every vet just kind of helped me out through the NBA.
You'd kind of bounced around high schools, right? And then ended up, you know, you had to sit your junior year. And so, you know, but you did all the AU stuff. Then you played for Etta Zamet at Westchester. But, you know, anywhere you'd gone, like, you were a dude, right? So what's that like, though, to roll out? You're in the NBA, but there were so many games you didn't play early on in your career. What do you remember about that part of the experience?
Like I said, I just knew how to work hard. You know what I mean? Even if I didn't get the opportunities I was looking for, I always was the first one to step up and work hard, do things that other players wasn't willing to do. And I felt like that just kept me in the NBA and kept me having such a long career. I didn't mind going down to the D League playing for a few years. I didn't mind coming off the bench. And when I finally got to start, you know, I tried to keep that starting position. It was a bunch of stuff I went through. But like I said, all I had as a young kid, I knew I had to, when I touched the floor, I knew I was going to work harder than anybody else.
You'd been in the league, and then you get sent, and you're, like, what you're describing in terms of work ethic and not pouting, like, that seems like something mature far beyond your years. So you get sent to the D League. Like, you're a dude who played in the league, and, you know, Mateen Klee is a former first-round pick. He's in there. Some other dudes are in there as well. What was that experience like?
Man, it was great, man. I feel like if you just love the game of basketball and you just want to go out there and play and prove that you can play to a high level, why not go to the D League or G League and play basketball? Because our team at the time was a championship team. It was stacked. And I didn't have the opportunity to play because, you know, they were going for another championship. And I actually asked, like, well, okay, why don't I go down to the D League and go out there and actually get some games under my belt? So when I am ready to play at a championship level, you guys can bring me up. And I did just that. And like I said, I didn't pout about it. You know, I just embraced it. I loved it. And I got to play with some great guys. Like you said, Mateen Cleaves and all those guys. A fellow teammate, Alex Acker, at the time was down there with me. And we just enjoyed the grind.
How did you adjust when you're in Sioux Falls the next year? That sounds, a dude from L.A. in Sioux Falls, that sounds like an interesting experience.
Yeah, it was, honestly, it was like a foreign country to me. You know, I didn't know where I was. Everything was white snow everywhere. And like I said, I just focused on the basketball part. Where were we staying down there? I think we were staying at one of those Westin hotels, I believe. I don't know where I can't remember where we're staying at. But it was just it was like that's the city you go and just actually just completely focus on basketball, and that's what I did.
You get traded to the Bucks, and then eventually you land in Toronto, and that's where your career really, really took off, right? I mean, and if you track go ahead.
Yeah, once I went to Detroit, I've learned basically how the NBA life works. They taught me everything I leave. So I got to Toronto, I felt like, okay, now I'm on my own. Like, I had some great vets there, but I felt like I've learned so much from the different players I've had. It's time to basically take your wings and fly. And that's where I probably had my six-year career there. That's where I probably had some of the best years of my career playing out there in Toronto.
Yeah, what is it like to go, like, and, you know, your guys, you don't make it unless you have supreme self-confidence. But, you know, second-round pick, I guess your first big deal was with the Pistons. The biggest one was with the Raptors. Like, what's it like emotionally to go, you know, NBA, D-League, D-League, trade around, to sign one of those big deals like your $34 million deal? What is that feeling like?
Big time. I feel like, for the young guys, I feel like 90% of the NBA is all mental. I mean, because as young players, we've been doing this all our life, like growing up playing basketball in parks, in gyms, and anywhere possible. We even make our own hoops up in the bedroom. And I feel like it's just so mental when you play in front of crowds and play with a team and play against these stars, you know what I mean? Because we definitely know how to play the game. And it's just the mental part. It's just, you got to just maintain. And I feel like you just got to think where it all started from. And knowing that you can play with these guys. And once I got my big paycheck, you know, it was just like, wow, this is all I worked for my entire life. And you just want to just thrive off that. You just want to continue working and just to see if you can just get more and more. And it was just a big accomplishment for me.
When you work all this time, like, take me back to Sioux Falls. You talk about it was just all about basketball. You got a game that night. Would you have a full workout earlier in the day, or were you just a show up hours before and get a workout? What was your routine?
No, I would have a full workout. You know, they had brought one of the assistant coaches down there at the time named Ryan Hoover, and he would wake up in the morning with me, and we would just get some shots up and work. You know, so it was constant work.
And Ryan Hoover, Ryan Hoover, little white dude from Notre Dame.
Yeah, you remember Ryan Hoover?
He was my teammate. I was a point guard. He was a two guard. He was a senior. I was a freshman. I started Notre Dame my freshman year. Who's my guy, right? Wow. And I like that. First of all, that dude can hoop. That dude can. He can really hoop. Yeah. He can really, really shoot. And if you don't believe me, just ask him. He'll tell you about it, right? Like, yeah. Rockford, Illinois. He could. So in terms of your routine, because I find this fascinating that dudes don't talk enough about. Did you get in the mindset of, hey, I'm a pro now, I'm just going to do what I do well and focus on that? Or were you constantly in season trying to expand your game? What's your philosophy?
First of all, I worked within the offense for the team when I know I can get my looks, you know, and it was basically at the elbow, which was the offense, and I worked from the elbow at the time. And then I would just work on some skill, just get a bunch of shots. One thing I do wish in my career is, like, I would have shot more threes because the NBA has transitioned to the three-point line. So I wish I would have did that early on. But now I would work on a bunch of shots, drives, and post-ups. Post-ups were real big back in the NBA when I was playing. And just different stuff, you know.
In an interesting, like, when you were growing up, you're still in the era where, you know, when you're bigger than dudes, coaches would yell at you to get down at the block and work on your game. And now,
absolutely.
Right now, like, it's like
when I came to the NBA, I was like, what, 210, 215? I had to put on weight to guard guys like Shaq. You know what I mean? So that was like the NBA. Like, you had to guard the post. Like, I had to guard Ben Wallace and Rasheed Wallace in practice, and Tony McDyess and Kelvin Cato and Chris Webber. Like, I had to guard those guys that were on the block, so I had to basically put on this weight to guard those guys. And now you're guarding guys nowadays like KD and Kyrie and all those guys that are versatile like that, that likes to shoot the three. So the NBA definitely transitioned big time to where when I've been in there. So
in 2015, you go to the Boston Celtics, sign a deal with the Boston Celtics. Brad Stevens is your coach.
Yes, sir.
What was that like?
Yes. Great dude, man. Young coach, so in sync into the basketball world, like constantly stays up and watches film, can create a play off the fly. Like we would be in the game and he would see something there, another team was doing defensively. He'll call a timeout, draw up a play to kind of break down their defense. And I found that just amazing. Like I had so many different coaches, and different coaches are good at certain things. Like you have coaches that are just strictly good at defense. You got coaches that are good at just talking to players, and you got coaches that can actually, you know, draw plays and coach. And Brad Stevens was one of those coaches that could actually talk to you and draw up a play for you to break down their defense. And he was just a wizard, you know, with that.
That second year, you guys go to the Eastern Conference Finals. That's the year that Isaiah was unbelievable, right? He's averaging like 29 a game. Like the rest of the team was just built on, like, you guys just defended and then kind of let him go into shot clock, and he would just go. What was that season like?
Oh man, he was out of his mind. You know, we fed off of Isaiah. The team when I got there, they had made the playoffs before I got there. They lost to Cleveland in the first round, and we were just, they were basically trying to build on that. So they brought me along for Toronto, from Toronto. And, we're basically looking to build to make it further in the playoffs. And we did just that, you know, with the team we had, playing off of Isaiah and the coaching of Brad Stevens. You know, we almost got it there. You know, we just fell short to Cleveland and, a couple of injuries we had when Isaiah got hurt, that kind of when he came back, and about his sister, when his sister's passing, rest in peace, China, she passed, and that was kind of a difficult stage for us as a team. But what we accomplished there to basically rebuilding the Celtics, I think we did a great job.
What is it like to guard LeBron?
You gotta be strong. You know, you can't be soft guarding LeBron because he comes at you downhill a lot, and if he finds any weakness, he'll just overpower you. I feel like you just gotta make him go one way to the help. You have to have help guarding him. One-on-one is gonna be tough, and you have to guard him. Send him to the help. Whatever your defensive plan is that night against him, you have to stick to it, or else he'll tear you apart. And if you do guard him well, he'll just start passing it and give open guys. So I think you have to be almost perfect with your game plan before the game. And if you mess that up, you know, he'll pick you apart, especially in the playoffs, because the playoffs is another different level for him. So, and that's just experience of what I experienced or what I've seen.
What's it like to guard Durant?
Durant, very shifty, not as strong, 7 foot, can shoot over you. he is an all around tough guard. Because if you pressure him, make him drive, he can get to the basket and dunk. And if you shade off, back off, he can shoot over you. So all I would say is do your best to stay in front of him with the hand up. If you're strong, try to use your strength on him, and do your best to contain him, because he has the all-around game, especially just the years he has grown as a player. You know, he has so much skills with 7 foot. And, like, I was watching something where, I think online, where, like, players evolve. Like, I think the two power forwards that were shooting were, like, at the time were Chris Bosh and Kevin Garnett. And then, like, the league just transformed to all these stretch fours and whatnot. And right now, KD is, like, ranked at the top right now with just him being at the 4-5 spot where he can just take any big off the dribble or shoot over him. So he's definitely a tough guard.
All right, Kawhi Leonard.
Kawhi Leonard is, I feel like he is like the wing Tim Duncan type. Doesn't really have a flashy game. All he needs is his two dribbles, get to a spot, and he can make a jump shot. He can post up. He's a strong player, too. Can post up, get to a spot. I guess he is what his name is. You know, what they call him, like the Terminator Robot or whatever he calls him. He basically plays the game the right way. And, again, can take over a game, which is a superstar player. And it's just simple as it is. It is what it is. He can get to it. Any shot he wants. You don't have to do too many crossovers. He just a couple dribbles and he'll shoot over you. You know, of course he has those big hands, so he can palm the ball and do what he wants. And it's he's an all around player.
All right, what about Giannis?
Giannis, he developed tremendously, man. I remember him as a young rook, and he's one of those guys that has a crazy work ethic of just getting bigger and stronger. Like, you know, he became one of the biggest, strongest guys in the NBA. Almost unstoppable in transition with his length and his strength. He's developing a great three-point shot, man. If he has that, sky's the limit for him. I definitely believe he'll win a championship, a few of them, eventually.
When you went to Philadelphia, you're brought in kind of like in Boston, right? Like, you're a culture. Everybody respects you as a culture guy. You'll defend. You'll do little things. You've been a part of championship caliber organizations, right? So you go to Philly and they have Embiid. What's he like? Because I've seen Embiid. I saw him in college, and I remember I walked into the gym. I was doing a Kansas game. And Bill Self was like, this guy's he's a Hall of Famer. And I was like, what? He's like, he's a Hall of Famer. And he's an unbelievably skilled guy, but he's also a huge goofball. What was Embiid like?
I mean, definitely one of those guys that can be a Hall of Famer. I feel like he is one of the only guys that actually will post up on the block, like a big, a legitimate big, that will post up on the block and can get you a bucket at any time. Definitely a goofball. He's still a young kid, fun to be around, always cracking jokes. But he has a tremendous work ethic. He's strong. He's big. And he's one of those transforming bigs, not only can post up, can actually take you out on the wing and do a couple of moves to get to the basket, to do Euro steps, man. He's unbelievable, man. He's just constantly evolving his game every year, just doing different stuff. Knock down a three. I mean, what more can you ask for from a big? You know, he gives you an all-around game. And like you said, when you need a serious bucket, put him on the block, and he'll get you a bucket a game.
Why won't Ben Simmons shoot the ball?
Like I said before, you know, 90% of the NBA is all mental. You know, it's just confidence. You know, until he feels he can shoot, because he shoots in practice. Don't get me wrong, he can shoot threes. Until he feels confident enough to shoot the three ball in the game, he'll do it. You know, and he's just constantly building that confidence. But he's been an all-star, 2 years around? He's been player of the month of the year, rookie of the year. You know, it's just confidence just building up, getting better and better. Like I said, he's a young player. Guys, I mean, he's going to eventually start shooting. I know he shot a couple threes earlier this year. And he'll eventually start shooting once he gets that confidence to shoot threes. But, he's dominated. He doesn't really need to, because he can get to the basket anytime he wants.
Yeah. No, look, I always thought, like, he's, like, too smart. Like, he understands that he's not ready yet or whatever, so he won't uncork him. But on some level, you almost have to shoot him. Like, look, Giannis shoots him, and he's still not there yet. But you have to do it in order to keep the defense honest. It's sometimes, like, you think too much, and whereas
he will, You will, because when we used to practice against them, we used to, on purpose, we used to back all the way down to the middle of the key. So he has to force you to shoot him. He used to knock him down, and he used to win games like that when we used to play 5-on-5. So he has the shot. You know, he just has to have the confidence. And we used to just help him out by just backing all the way off him in practice and just letting him shoot it. So it's just all confidence with him.
All right, so you're playing in this 3-on-3 deal in Vegas, right?
Yes, sir.
What's it like?
It is fun. It's for me, it's a good way to stay in shape. You know, I've been working out this whole time throughout the year because I haven't been picked up, and for me to just kind of play in this, it's a fun ordeal to play. I haven't played organized basketball since, you know, that shot Kawhi we lost in the playoffs. So it's a fun tournament, and it's actually, it gets real serious. You know, I realized it was serious when I seen they have BetOnline offering wagers and all that, and I'm like, okay, people are really betting on us. And it gets serious, or at least I'm taking it serious. And it's just a fun ordeal. A way for me to just keep staying in shape, keep working, and if you want to check it out, you can check it out on DirecTV or on demand, and it's just a fun thing for me to go play and play some organized basketball.
Yeah, it's on pay-per-view. It's like $19.99 if you want to watch a single game, $70, $69.99 if you want to watch the entire tournament. All former NBA guys. And like you said, you haven't played since that shot. Okay, so take me to what was discussed in the huddle before the play where Kawhi hit that incredible shot?
Well, deny the pass in. We're switching everything. We know the shot clock was low. The time was low, so we weren't going to let no threes go off or no shot go off, so we were doing our best to force something at the basket with the contest. And as I see that shot over and over again, man, we made the right play. We had the great contest, and it was crazy because when I was on the bench watching, and it was such great D we had, like I knew the switches and I knew the contest, I turned my back, and I'm like, okay, that shot is off because – we were all over that, and all I heard was the crowd cheering, and I turned around like, what happened? And I seen the replay. I made the shot, so I didn't even see the fourth shot go in until I saw the replay, and I'm like, wow, we played great defense on that. We did what we said we were going to do in the huddle, and he just made a tough shot, man. One of the best shots I've seen live. Well, I couldn't say I didn't see it live because I seen the replay because I turned my back.
You were actually there and you didn't see it. What's crazy, there's a bunch of things that are crazy about it, right? Like, one, it's over Embiid, right? So, and now look, you don't want him to get to Kawhi to get to his right hand, but I've never seen a shot hit the front rim twice, the back rim twice, and then go in. Like, that's got to be the softest rim I've ever seen.
It over a 7-footer, man. He has so much air on the shot. I don't know. But I think he works on that, man. So that's just one of those great players doing the fundamentals he works on. And he just made an unbelievable shot, man. I believe if we would have won that game, we'd have won that series, and we'd have went off to win a championship. I believe that truly to this day. But, the playoffs is tough, you know? The playoffs is tough. You know, I've been in a bunch of them, and it's a different level. And I always see in players' eyes, like, what separates the players from the rest. And you can tell, man, like LeBron and D-Wade, unbelievable playoff mode. Unbelievable when they get in their playoff mode. Kawhi is the same.
It's that's the perfect – I have friends that coach in the NBA, and they always say, like, look, this league – sometimes you just great defense, but just guys that just makes a great shot, right? Like the guys are so good, you can play almost perfect defense, and guys are just they're so good they make those shots. Whereas at any other level of basketball,
you know the saying. I'm pretty sure you heard. You know, great D, better offense.
Yeah, that's the expression. Where were you when you heard Kobe died?
I first heard it. I was at my house in Vegas, and I seen it on social media, and like you know, social media is always, you know, lying about stuff. So I didn't pay no mind, and then I started getting text messages, and so I'm looking like, yeah, I've seen it, but you know, I didn't believe that's true. So like, okay, I went on my day, laid back down, and then I cut on the TV, and I'm like, okay, wait a minute, if it's three times in a day, this can't be real. And then I found out. I kept watching TV, and then I just shut it down, and then I just folded, man. I folded in the couch, didn't move. Day was ruined, and I just kind of just slept it off. And it was heartbreaking, man. It was heartbreaking. Still is. Can't believe it.
When you think of Kobe, what do you think of?
One of the greatest players in NBA history, great mentor, great father, great man. He is one of those guys that did everything right, you know, in the public eye, and you just hate to have a tragedy. So like that, especially for the NBA world, because it touched everybody.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
I'm just so happy. Say, go again, say it again.
No, it's really interesting because he's a couple years younger than me, and we got to be friends for a couple years before he died, and but to watch like his own kind of personal evolution, I think maybe is the most fascinating part, right? Because when he got to the league, you know, here he is in L.A., and he clearly wanted to be Jordan, right? Like, he talked like Mike, he walked like Mike, he wanted to pattern his game after Mike. Like, he was like, I'm going to be the next Mike. And he had that, but it wasn't, and then he went through like a, then he went through kind of where he was trying to be a little hood, which he's not, he wasn't really, but he was trying. And then by the end, you're like, holy crap, this guy's brilliant. Right. And he became this mentor to so many people. He had, you know, his enterprise as well, but he became kind of this brilliant dude who understood so many things about business, about, you know, the realness of basketball. And there wasn't any of the BS. Like, this guy was just a brilliant man who understood how to relate to different levels of people, how to speak to NBA stars. Obviously, he carried with him an incredible amount of respect from NBA stars. But then, you know, he developed his business enterprise. And, like, he just was – it was really interesting to watch a guy kind of change and evolve and grow up. And that's – and maybe it's because of L.A., and maybe it's because he was so good and so popular, or maybe it's just because of the era where we did have the ability to watch him grow and evolve. But, yeah, he became – He went through these different times and tribulations or whatever. Like, you know, he wanted out of the Lakers. He had some, you know, the one off, he had the off the court thing in Colorado. Like, he went through all these different things, but it was all very, very public. And then kind of came out the other side as a guy where like 60 points in his last game, right? Like, who does that? This shit was crazy. 60 in his last game.
I think, man, everything that you said just falls upon his work ethic, man. His ability to work is just unmatched, man. He does stuff that I hear about that I've just never heard like players doing just with the game of basketball. And I think it just transferred his way of living, like his work ethic. Like what his wife said, he said he came late one day to pick up his daughter, and the next time he came like 3 or 4 hours earlier, and he said he'll never pick up his daughter late. Like, it's just mind is just trained to just be better every day. And it's just something that's to look up to. Like,
Like, as players, you say, okay, damn, well, what would Kobe do? Well, Kobe would be up late getting shots, or Kobe would go and get shots up before the meeting. And that was just his way of living, his mindset. And it just transferred into all of us in the NBA.
If you could do one thing differently in your career, what would it be?
I always said I would have loved to shoot more threes. Like, I felt like that is set me back right now from being in the NBA today. Because at the end of my season with Philly last year, Brett Brown, he said to me, this is my Brett Brown voice, "You know what, Ace? You know, we love what you do. You bring energy on the court, you rebound, you hustle. But we want to go with Mike Muscala because he shoots better with the three and he spaces the floor better." And I was like, "Coach, there's no way I'm going to let Mike Muscala outwork me on the floor." No disrespect with Mike. You know, Mike is a great player. But I was like, he's not going to outwork me. He was like, "You know, he just fits better, you know, with the three-point range percentage-wise." And the NBA, again, it transformed into a three-point league, and everybody's looking at stats. If, as a coach's standpoint, if you look at my body of work and career, I was always the hustle guy, getting rebounds, scoring points that way, and that's what got me paid. So I was just so used to doing that. And now I got a space to floor shoot threes. And as much as I've been working on shooting threes, I developed a shot now, but nobody kind of could see that throughout my career. Okay, this guy doesn't shoot threes. So I wish I would have just been shooting threes a little bit my career. And I didn't get to shoot threes. Probably I shot them a little bit in Toronto, but when I got to Boston in that Brad Stevens offense, I shot a lot more threes. And I wish I would have did that. That's what I wish I could have did.
How do you get yourself going now? Like you said, like this is, you're playing this 3-on-3 deal in Vegas. First organized ball you played since last year. How hard is that for you? Because you've always kind of been part of a team. Now you still want to play. You still want to be in the league. How do you get yourself up and work every day?
Well, I still have that mentality. Like I said, I think of the guys before me. I think of Kobe and how I've came up to make it in the NBA, and I just keep that same mindset. Like, how did I get here today? What did I do? And like, okay, well, this is what I was doing. I was in the gym early. I was in the gym late. I was working out 3-4 times a day. And I just kind of stick to it. That's what I know. I know how to work. And I continue that. And especially if it's definitely important to keep up with yourself at this time with everything going on with the COVID. So I just make sure I stay in shape, keep up with my health. And when the call comes, you know, I'm ready. And, you know, just gotta stay ready. I'm pretty sure every vet that's been through this ordeal that I'm going through, that's been out the league, has probably been through the same stages of making their way back in, of staying in shape. Hence, Jamal Crawford, Carmelo Anthony, J.R. Smith. You just gotta stay ready, just to keep that mindset of when they need you, when they need a good vet on a championship team, they'll call you.
Favorite hotel you stayed out on the road in the NBA?
Favorite hotel. Let's see. There is a lot. Well, you can't beat Miami. You know, the Ritz in Miami is nice because you got the weather, you got the pool. You know, that's always a go-to. You know what I really like that's kind of like hidden? I like the hotel in Chicago? The Peninsula.
That's it. I have a friend. One of my friends like, "Have you ever been to the Peninsula in Chicago?" He's like, "No." He's like, "It's literally the nicest hotel I've ever been to. I never want to leave."
Beautiful hotel. I think Chicago has one of like the best skylines, and it was a nice hotel. But you can't beat the cities with like this good weather. Like when you make that West Coast trip, and you go to like the West Coast cities, when you finally, if you're playing the East Coast and you get a bunch of snow the whole time, and you go to the West Coast and you get some sun, I'm like, oh, okay, here's the sun. So
I mean, can you believe though that like here you are, the Lakers and Clippers are finally good, and you haven't gotten that call, like that's got to be that's the call you want, right? Purple and gold. That's got to be the call. I mean,
I mean, my whole career, I've always played for an East Coast team. I've never played for any West Coast team, man. It'll just be awesome if I could play one time in my hometown, man. That'll be beautiful. I know my family will be going crazy. Like, oh, because they're all Laker fans. Like, he's playing for the Lakers. Like, yeah.
Who's the one dude who didn't make it, you're most surprised didn't make it? Like, my generation, Shea Cotton, he's a little younger than you. He's a little older than you. Who's the guy who you're most surprised didn't make it? Whereas you did, and some of the other guys.
Didn't he have a documentary?
Yeah.
Just recently, I think.
Manchild. It's called Manchild. Yeah.
Manchild. I didn't even know about him until I watched the documentary, and that dude was unbelievable, man.
No, he was nice.
I was watching that very day. Yeah,
he was nice.
He was unbelievable.
Who's the Shea Cotton of your age?
He's not my age, but when I was in high school, we went to watch some of his games with D'Angelo Collins, I believe.
Yep. How about this one? He lived at my parents' house.
Really?
Yeah, he went to my high school. He got in trouble because he got in a fight, bad fight at my high school. And that's kind of what began kind of the spiral, man. A little bit.
So dominant, man. And I remember watching him, like, the McDonald's in one of these little All-Star games and killing everybody. And he just couldn't get over the hump. There's another one, too, another guy that went to Fairfax. Let me think of his name. I think he got hurt.
Evan
Burns.
Evan Burns. He played for my brother at San Diego State.
Evan Burns was another one, man. I used to go to their games in Fairfax and Westchester was like the rivals, and he was going up against Trevor Reese and all those guys. He was another guy that definitely should have made it.
Well, you did, and hopefully you'll make it back again. I cannot tell you how much I appreciate your time and how much I respect your work ethic and all you've done, all you've accomplished in the sport. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you so much. And again, tune in to the tournament. Again, DirecTV, on demand. You can check me out. I'll be playing hard.
Thanks, Amir.
All right, thank you.
What an interesting guy, right? And a great perspective, and a guy who does have an amazing work ethic. And, you know, as a guy who he bounced around at like four different high schools, when he transferred from Vernon Day to play for Ed Azam at Westchester, he missed his whole junior year. But he was widely respected as the best player in the state of California. There's some really good players in his graduating class. And he went straight to the pros and, you know, kind of got buried for a couple of years. And while he's had some success and did have some rather sizable contracts, he's never been close to the best player on his team, which is part of the discussion with going to college, which is you do have to learn to dominate at your level. Now, I don't know how he would have been used had he gone and played at Louisville. I don't know if he would have put on as much weight and become really kind of a tenacious defensive player and stopper. But that's one of the things that happens is if you get to the league and you don't stick right away, you got to figure out, all right, what is the role that I can play in order to stay in the league? Which, God bless him. I mean, look, at some point you just decide this is who I am. This is who I'm going to be. But for a guy who was one of the top five, top 10 high school players in America to then become a role player throughout his entire NBA life, that kind of speaks to when you skip that, you skip college. You know, you go to college, you dominate for a year, you dominate for 2 years. Now you go to the NBA, you're a little bit older, a little bit more mature. And by the time things clicked for him in the NBA, they would have been clicking out of college. Would he have been set back a couple years in terms of the big free agency money? Sure, but he never really landed the huge free agency money anyway. So I think college is, it's as close to perfect as you're going to get. I think the G League's flawed because you are playing against older dudes. You are playing against more talented dudes. You're missing playing in college. You're missing the first time away from home, but you don't really have to worry about money. You don't have to be an adult, as he was talking about, kind of an adult lifestyle. I think all that stuff is important to live on your own, to go away from home, to learn about being part of a team, but also to dominate around your age group, which you're not going to do when you get to the NBA, with the exception of, you know, LeBron James, who's a freak of nature. once in a generation player. So I loved having Amir on. I really appreciate him joining us. And thank you so much for listening. I'm Doug Gottlieb, and this is All Ball.